This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, covering Milford and its surrounding towns. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. This is Melanie Goralnik. In the next hour, we will be bringing you the news from May 31st's edition of the Milford Daily News. The first story is Bellingham MA starts work on new water treatment plant by Beth McDermott. The town of Bellingham recently held a groundbreaking ceremony to commemorate the start of construction of a new water treatment building on Hartford Avenue, according to a community announcement. Town officials say the so-called Hartford Avenue Water Treatment Plant PFAS upgrade is a major investment in the town's water infrastructure and long-term public health protection. Town officials, project partners, residents, and stakeholders gathered at the project site to recognize the milestone and highlight the benefits the project will bring to the community. This project represents an important investment in Bellingham's infrastructure and continued commitment to serving our residents, said Jesse Rydell, Bellingham DPW director, in a statement. We appreciate the collaboration and support from everyone involved in helping move this effort forward. This is a major infrastructure investment, and it reflects the town's commitment to proactively addressing challenges with long-term solutions. The project includes upgrades to the town's existing water treatment systems to address PFAS compounds, a growing concern for communities throughout the country, while also reducing disinfectant byproducts within the drinking water system, according to the announcement. Town officials say these improvements will help ensure Bellingham's drinking water continues to meet or exceed all state and federal drinking water standards, while protecting public health well into the future. Construction is anticipated to continue through the fall of 2027, according to the announcement. There is a picture of the groundbreaking event. So there are 7 men and 2 women that are standing in a cleared lot of dirt. And they're all in business attire except for one guy who's just wearing like a windbreaker and khaki pants. The rest are in like blue suits or gray suits. They're all wearing a white hard hat and they're holding a shovel and smiling. One lady is actually digging. The others are just standing there with it propped up. Photo courtesy of Bellingham DPW. That story was Bellingham MA starts work on new water treatment plant by Beth McDermott. The next story is an opinion column. We must respond to all incidents of hate, however its form, by Rabbi Danny Berkman and Reverend J. Anthony Lloyd. An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. In the shadow of World War II, Pastor Martin Niemöller wrote his famous passage that begins, quote, "First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a socialist." His writings reflected on the silence of so many as the Nazis attacked various minority groups within German society. According to Niemöller, these bystanders did not speak out because they were not directly targeted. But, as he cautions at the end, quote, "Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." This has become a famous passage in responding to hate, racism, and anti-Semitism. It serves as a reminder that we cannot only speak when we are directly attacked, but must speak out when anyone is attacked. As Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. famously wrote, quote, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." We cannot choose to speak only when hatred reaches our own doorstep. An attack on any minority community is an attack on the values that hold a democratic society together. And so, we must respond to all incidents of hate, racism, and anti-Semitism. This does not happen nearly enough in our society. Frequently, it is the targeted group, sometimes with a few allies, who are forced to stand up and be the first responders to voices of hate. As clergy for the Black and Jewish communities here in Metro West, we have unfortunately been called upon many times to respond to attacks against our respective communities. But we have also been sure to speak up and speak out when the attack is not against us specifically. And now, with a recent incident of vandalism in Natick, we have seen both of our communities attack together. On the wall of an elementary school, a place meant to teach children dignity, belonging, and safety, a swastika and an anti-Black racial slur were scrawled side by side. We have long said that an attack on one of us is an attack on both of us. This time, the perpetrators of this crime made that connection explicit. The graffiti was rightly condemned in a joint statement from the Natick Police Department, Natick Public Schools, and the town of Natick. The wall was quickly repainted so the children and their families did not have to see it. But hatred does not disappear as easily as spray paint. And with the repeated attacks that our communities have witnessed in recent years, one does begin to wonder if words are enough. Where is the action to actually challenge this behavior and these crimes? The hateful words and symbol have been covered up by purple paint, which, while helping to erase the crime, does appear to make it obvious that there is something hiding behind the oddly shaped blocks of paint on the brick wall. And while we, of course, want those symbols removed as quickly as possible, perhaps this allows our communities to keep moving on too quickly from these incidents of hate. The graffiti is covered, and so life moves on. But we, in the communities who were targeted, still carry the pain. The spray paint may be gone, but the scar remains, visible like the uneven blocks of purple paint still covering the wall. For a long time in responding to racism, anti-Semitism, and hate, we have tried to make it clear that we are all victims of these attacks, and so we must all respond together to affirm that there is no place for this type of behavior in our communities. This latest incident has illustrated that the perpetrators of these crimes do not distinguish. Their hate is aimed at all of us. They have directly targeted the Black and Jewish communities, but in reality, they are targeting each and every one of us. And in the face of these attacks, it cannot just be the Black and Jewish communities who continue to raise the alarm after the statement has been issued and the graffiti removed. The question before us is not whether Natick condemns hate. The question is whether we are prepared to confront it together before the next wall is marked, the next child is frightened, and the next community is told they do not belong. The words of Dr. King come to mind at a time such as this. Quote, "Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly." From his April 1963 letter from a Birmingham jail. The challenge today is not to accept this behavior as normal or dismiss it as a childish prank. Hate is a learned value. And when it's on display, it challenges our values as a community. To have this happen at one of our schools speaks volumes about the attack on our centers of learning for our next generation. The slow erosion of our values and what we hold dear is happening before our eyes. To paraphrase King, quote, "The ultimate measure of a man or woman is not where they stand in moments of comfort and convenience, but where they stand at times of challenge and controversy. Natick, now is the time to stand up." There is a picture of Rabbi Danny Berkman. He's wearing a navy blue suit, a plaid pink, blue, and dark blue tie. He's got a brown and gray kind of salt and pepper beard, brown eyes, great smile. He's balding, or maybe all bald. I can't really tell because he's got his yarmulke on. He's got a super great smile, really warm face. He's got his arms crossed in front of his chest, and he's standing in front of some kind of artwork that is a tree with many pretty colored leaves. Photo courtesy of Rabbi Danny Berkman. The next picture is of Reverend J. Anthony Lloyd. And he is at church at the pulpit. You can see in front of him is like a brass cross that has some kind of thing in the center. I can't tell what it is. It's out of focus. And to the side, there's a candle burning. And there's also like a piece of red fabric over the podium. And Reverend Lloyd he's a big guy, and he's leaning over on the podium and pointing in the air and has this expression like he's making a point. And he's got on these black-rimmed glasses. He's wearing a striped shirt with a black vest over it, and he's got gray hair that's short. He's an African-American guy and really good-looking, too. Photo courtesy of Anne Ringwood. That story was opinion. We must respond to all incidents of hate, however its form, by Rabbi Danny Berkman and Reverend J. Anthony Lloyd. The next story is the opinion column. Declining vaccine rates lead to more infectious diseases, by Howard Dean. In the first 3 months of 2026, America logged about 1,600 measles cases, nearly as many as the total number for all of 2025, which was by far the worst year we've seen in decades for the highly infectious virus. In fact, because we've had more than 12 straight months of continuous measles spread, the nation should lose the measles elimination status we achieved back in 2000. I should say should, because Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was granted a delay of the April 13th meeting of the Pan American Health Organization, where officials were expected to reach that embarrassing conclusion until its annual meeting, which is scheduled for after the midterm elections. A coincidence, no doubt. Measles cases are spiking because the share of Americans who've received the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, which protects 97% of people from getting the virus when exposed to it, has dropped below the critical threshold recommended for community protection. Under the vaccine skeptic Kennedy's leadership, vaccination rates for other diseases are also trending downward and could soon fall below their own respective thresholds, opening the door for all sorts of previously eliminated diseases to make a dangerous comeback. Our public health system isn't ready for these infectious diseases. Experts are already sounding alarms about underreporting, inconsistent data collection, and delayed responses due to a lack of coordination between government centers and agencies, and weakened surveillance systems. Meanwhile, our most prominent public health leaders are actively taking steps to peel back decades of public health infrastructure that has improved and protected our communities. Last year, Kennedy threw a critical vaccine advisory panel into chaos by abruptly firing all of its experts and replacing them with his own picks, few of whom have any meaningful vaccine experience. Since then, the panel of self-described rookies has struggled to cast votes, flip-flopped on key decisions, and attempted to overhaul long-standing vaccine guidelines, a move that was temporarily blocked by a federal judge in March due to legal challenges from public health groups. With the guiding document on vaccine guidelines set to expire April 1, Kennedy forged ahead and signed a new set of recommendations that, according to an attorney who has argued in court against his policies, quote, doesn't conform with the spirit of the judge's order. This behavior fuels vaccine hesitancy, increases misinformation, and destroys trust in public health institutions. Communities across the country will soon feel the consequences, if they haven't already. Infectious disease outbreaks drive up hospitalizations, increase the risk of long-term complications, strain healthcare systems, and cost taxpayers. And notably, they tend to disproportionately hurt the most vulnerable Americans. Falling vaccination rates leave immunocompromised individuals especially exposed. Many cannot receive certain vaccines and depend on high community vaccination for protection. Without it, they face a higher risk of severe illness. Older adults, young children, and patients with underlying health conditions are also more vulnerable. Public health leaders must act immediately to restore transparent data reporting, consistent federal-state coordination, and expert, science-driven advisory processes. And they must reinforce vaccination infrastructure, surveillance systems, and rapid response capabilities. If they don't, we'll soon all pay the price. There is a head and shoulders picture of Howard Dean, who wrote this article. He has salt and pepper gray hair, parted on the side. It's very conservative and nice. He's got these really long eyebrows that are gray and brown. He has a huge smile, very welcoming smile, and brown eyes, and he's wearing a suit and tie. The background's just out of focus. Photo courtesy of Howard Dean. That story was Opinion. Declining vaccine rates lead to more infectious diseases, by Howard Dean. The next story is one Massachusetts beach closed for water quality as state beaches open for season, by Catherine Messier. Memorial Day is behind us, and summer has unofficially begun in Massachusetts, even if the weather hasn't received the memo. If you are planning to head to a beach this weekend, despite the unseasonably chilly and rainy forecast, the Massachusetts Department of Conservation and Recreation, DCR, are open for the season. But four are closed ahead of the weekend, according to the tracker. So if you're making plans, you'll want to avoid these spots. As of Friday, May 29 at 10 a.m., four beaches are closed in Massachusetts. Damon Pond Beach in Ashby, Fearings Pond Beach 2 in Plymouth, Lake Wyola in Shutesbury, and Cochituate State Park Beach in Natick. Cochituate State Park Beach, I hope I said that right, is the only one closed for a harmful cyanobacteria bloom, according to the state. The Massachusetts Department of Public Health states that swimming in water at closed beaches poses a threat of illness due to high levels of bacteria. Symptoms of waterborne illness can range from nausea and vomiting to a sore throat and fever, or even rashes and infections. The three other beaches are closed for other reasons, the dashboard says. Malibu Beach in Boston, which is off Morrissey Boulevard near Savin Hill, is back open after being closed last week. When will beaches in Massachusetts reopen? According to the MDPH website, beaches can only reopen when their bacteria levels are back within the safe range, so there is no set amount of time for a closure. The status of a closed beach can be checked on the website's water quality dashboard, which is updated at 9:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. daily. There is a picture taken on May 19th of Nantasket Beach in Hull. And wow, there are so many people. There's almost nowhere to sit on the sand. There's lots and lots of umbrellas. Most of them are blue. Some are striped, a few red ones there. But there's so many people waiting in the water and then sitting on the beach. It's just wall-to-wall people. Photo courtesy of Greg Durr, The Patriot Ledger. The next story is Alex Rickleen ends campaign for U.S. Senator in Massachusetts. Who he's endorsing, by Dan O'Brien. Alex Rickleen, the Wayland native who had been making a long-shot bid to challenge U.S. Senator Ed Markey in the Democratic primary this fall, announced this week that he is withdrawing from the race and endorsing Markey. My campaign to be the next U.S. Senator for Massachusetts is over, Rick Lean's campaign Facebook page stated on May 27th. The news came just before the start of this weekend's Massachusetts Democratic Party convention at the DCU Center in Worcester, where the future of U.S. Representative Seth Moulin's bid to replace Markey as senator could be determined. It won't be easy. Massachusetts hasn't unseated a sitting Democratic senator since 1946, which is the first term Senator David Walsh lost to the Republican challenger Henry Cabot Lodge. And Markey, seeking a third term after serving nearly 40 years in the House of Representatives, comes armed with experience, money, and plenty of progressive goodwill. Now, Rick Lean, who barely registered in the polls, is throwing his support behind Markey as well. Quote, "Since day one, I've voiced my agreements with Senator Markey on most matters of policy, especially on the climate crisis, health care, judicial reform, and the defense of American democracy," Rick Lean's Facebook announcement states. The choice in this primary race is clear. Massachusetts already has a senator who has spent his career standing up to bullies, polluters, and corporate power, and has consistently stood up to Donald Trump's attacks on our freedoms. Rick Lean ran because Democrats are playing it safe. That's a far different take than Rick Lean, a former history teacher who now lives in Acton, provided to the Daily News last fall. "The reason I'm running is because Democrats in Washington are playing it safe," Rick Lean said at the time. "We're in the midst of a crisis, and the United States Senate is where individuals have the most ability to push back and fight back and defend against this crisis. And Senator Markey is not doing all of the things that he can be doing." Rick Lean did say in the Daily News interview that he was not challenging Markey because of the incumbent's age. Markey turns 80 in July and would be 86 by the time he finishes another U.S. Senate term. "I'm running because there are things he can and should be doing that he's not," said Rick Lean, a father of two. During his campaign, he leaned heavily on community-level organization. "We ran a shoestring campaign, and we were careful with every dollar," Rick Lean said in the Facebook post. "We did not, however, raise enough to cover all costs." At this weekend's convention, delegates will vote on Democratic candidates for statewide office. Candidates must get at least 15% of the delegate vote to qualify for the September primary ballot. All voting for contested races will happen Saturday. There is a picture of Alex Rick Lean. He is wearing a suit jacket and a pink shirt that's kind of unbuttoned. He's got very short brown hair, brown eyes. And he, in this picture, he is shaking the hand of someone with their back to the camera who's wearing a black shirt and a black ball cap. And then there's a woman to that person's right, and she's out of focus. That photo provided by Alex Rick Lean. That story was Alex Rick Lean and campaign for U.S. Senator in Massachusetts, who he's endorsing, by Dan O'Brien. The next story is MIAA 2026 Spring Sports Playoff Schedule and Scores from Metro West, by Kyle Grabowski. With the way the weather has been, you're going to need to stay up to date. The MIAA spring sports postseason is underway, and we are tracking the schedule and results from baseball, softball, lacrosse, tennis, boys volleyball, and rugby tournaments. Action began over Memorial Day weekend and will continue through mid-June. So here we go. Monday, May 25th, girls lacrosse. Division 1 preliminary round. Number 29, Framingham 18. Number 36, Springfield Central 0. Division 2 preliminary round. Number 30, Northampton 12. Number 35, Ashland 9. Division 3 preliminary round. Number 31, Watertown 14. Number 34, Tri-County 6. Tuesday, May 26, Girls Lacrosse. Division 1, Round of 32. Number 16, Natick 17. Number 17, Winchester 11. Number 4, Westford Academy 20. Number 29, Framingham 2. Number 12, Franklin 15. Number 21, Andover 5. Number 13, Central Catholic 13. Number 20, Hopkinton 12. Division 3 Preliminary Round. Number 33, Amherst Pelham 13. Number 32, Medway 6. Number 22, Hudson 17. Number 43, Northeast Metro 4. Division 3 Round of 32. Number 9, Dover Sherborne 20. Number 24, Dighton Rehoboth 4. Division 4, Round of 32. Number 10, Hull 12. Number 23, AMSA 11. Boys Tennis, Division 2, Preliminary Round. Number 32, Ashland 3. Number 33, West Springfield 2. Division 3 Preliminary Round. Number 25, Dover Sherborne 5. Number 40, Turner's Falls 0. Girls Tennis, Division 3 Preliminary Round. Number 31, AMSA 4. Number 34, Notre Dame Worcester 1. Number 29, Pembroke 4. Number 36, Hudson 1. Wednesday, May 27. Girls Lacrosse, Division 1, Round of 32. Number 9, Lincoln Sudbury 13. Number 24, Needham 7. Number 7, Wellesley 17. Number 26, Boston Latin 4. Division 2, Round of 32. Number 7, Westboro 17. Number 26, Burlington 6. Division 3, Round of 32. Number 5, Wayland, 21. Number 28, Essex North Shore, 2. Division 4, Round of 32. Number 4, Nipmuc, 18. Number 29, Winthrop, 2. Number 11, Wacona, 13. Number 22, Hopedale, 3. Boys Tennis, Division 1, Round of 32. Number 7, Needham, 4. Number 26, Natick, 1. Number 13, Boston Latin, 4. Number 20, Framingham, 1. Division 3, Round of 32. Number 9, Medfield, 4. Number 24, Medway, 1. Girls Tennis, Division 1, Round of 32. Number 8, Wellesley, 5. Number 25, Framingham, 0. Number 21, Algonquin, 3. Number 12, Westboro, 2. Number 15, Natick, 5. Number 18, Central Catholic, 0. Division 2, Round of 32. Number 13, Wayland, 5. Number 20, Dartmouth, 0. Number 18, Holliston 3. Number 15, North Quincy 2. Division 3, Round of 32. Number 19, St. John Paul II 3. Number 14, Medway 2. Division 4, Round of 32. Number 8, Hopedale 5. Number 25, Mystic Valley 0. Number 15, Millis, 5. Number 18, Wareham, 0. Boys Volleyball, Division 1 Preliminary Round. Number 22, Nipmuc, 3. Number 43, Lynn English, 1. Thursday, May 28. Baseball, Division 3 Preliminary Round. Number 35, Oakmont, 3. Number 30, Blackstone Valley Tech, 1. Division 5 Preliminary Round. Number 31, Millis 3. Number 34, Gateway 2. Softball. Division 1 Preliminary Round. Number 31, Lincoln Sudbury 11. Number 34, Medford 4. Number 30, Weymouth 14. Number 35, Algonquin 1. Division 4 Preliminary Round. Number 28, Millis 16. Number 37, Southwick 4. Boys Lacrosse. Division 2 Round of 32. Number 19, Minichog 7. Number 14, Milford 6. Division 3 Preliminary Round. Number 27, Hudson 14. Number 38, Northeast Metro 1. Girls Lacrosse. Division 1, Round of 16. Number 1, Notre Dame Academy 17. Number 16, Natick 4. Division 2, Round of 32. Number 11, Billerica 10. Number 22, Algonquin 6. Division 3, Round of 32. Number 11, Weston, 18. Number 22, Hudson, 7. Boys Tennis, Division 1, Round of 32. Number 13, Wellesley, 4. Number 23, North Andover, 1. Number 9, Concord Carlisle, 5. Number 24, Hopkinton, 0. Number 2, Westford Academy, 5. Number 34, Franklin, 0. Number 5, Lincoln Sudbury, 5. Number 28, Waltham, 0. Division 2, Round of 32. Number 10, Algonquin, 5. Number 23, Quincy, 0. Division 3, Round of 32. Number 2, Wayland, 5. Number 31, Amherst, 0. Number 8, Wilmington, 3. Number 25, Dover-Sherborne, 2. Girls Tennis, Division 1, Round of 32. Number 17, Newton North, 3. Number 16, Hopkinton, 2. Division 3, Round of 32. Number 2, Dover-Sherborne, 5. Number 31, AMSA, 0. Boys Volleyball, Division 1, Preliminary Round. Number 31, Woburn 3. Number 34, Hopkinton 2. Division 1, Round of 32. Number 11, Methune 3. Number 22, Nipmuc 0. Division 2, Preliminary Round. Number 28, Keefe Tech 3. Number 37, Excel Academy Charter 0. Number 29, Millis 3. Number 36, Athol 1. Number 30, Assabet Valley 3. Number 35, Boston United 0. Division 2, Round of 32. Number 19, Draycott 3. Number 14, Bellingham 1. Boys Rugby, Division 2 Quarterfinals. Number 1, Algonquin 47. Number 8, Chelmsford 19. Friday, May 29. Baseball. Division 3, Round of 32. Number 3, Pembroke 1. Number 32, Medway 0. Number 40, Tri-County 2. Number 25, East Longmeadow 1. Division 4, Round of 32. Number 28, Bellingham 5. Number 37, Leicester 3. Softball. Division 1, Round of 32. Number 8, Newton North, 15. Number 25, Wellesley, 1. Division 2, Preliminary Round. Number 37, Wayland, 7. Number 28, Ashland, 6. Division 3, Preliminary Round. Number 34, Nauset, 17. Number 31, Hudson, 8. Division 3, Round of 32. Number 10, Cardinal Spelman, 13. Number 23, Blackstone Valley Tech, 0. Number 13, Fairhaven, 3. Number 20, Tri-County, 0. Boys Lacrosse, Division 1, Round of 32. Number 17, Wellesley, 12. Number 16, Chelmsford, 7. Number 8, Newton North, 18. Number 25, Franklin, 9. Division 2, Round of 32. Number 20, Marblehead, 8. Number 13, Westboro, 7. Division 3, Preliminary Round. Number 29, Tri-County, 9. Number 36, Bishop Fenwick, 5. Girls Lacrosse. Division 1, Round of 16. Number 9, Lincoln Sudbury, 10. Number 8, North Andover, 8. Division 3, Round of 16. Number 9, Dover Sherborne, 12. Number 8, Foxborough, 9. Number 5, Wayland, 18. Number 12, Falmouth, 8. Girls Tennis. Division 1, Round of 32. Number 19, Lincoln Sudbury, 3. Number 14, Bishop Feehan, 2. Okay, so this article is only halfway done, and in respect of your time, I hope that you don't mind that I'm just going to end it here, and that way I could read some more articles with the time we have. So that story was MIAA 2026 Spring Sports Playoff Schedule and Scores from Metro West by Kyle Grabowski. The next story is Looking for Love in Massachusetts? Try These Seemingly Unlikely Places. They Work, by Ruth Thompson. If you're looking for love in Massachusetts, forget smoky bars, sandy beaches, or sweaty gyms. And yes, even especially the dating apps. Instead, be sure your antenna is up when you're in the checkout line at Market Basket. Ace.com, an online gaming site, recently reported 4 seemingly unlikely places to meet your match in the Bay State, based on a national survey that drew 3,024 respondents. Massachusetts results were a subsection of the overall body of work. These spots aren't trying to be romantic, which is part of the appeal. Paul Murphy, general manager of Ace.com, wrote in an email in response to a query from Wicked Local. The survey provided multiple choice options, as well as open-ended options. So, without any further ado, here are 4 unlikely, yet promising, romantic spots in Massachusetts. The Cape Cod Ferry Terminals. Noted for their excellent Waiting for Summer to Begin energy, ferry terminals are breezy and crowded, allowing for casual chat time and getting-to-know-you moments while waiting in line. Next, Dunkin' Drive-Thru. Exchange a look while waiting for that burst of caffeine, and it could lead to something. Perhaps even a complimentary cup of coffee from a driver further up the line. Fewer places capture the Massachusetts romance essence like a Dunkin' Drive-Thru at 8 a.m. Brimfield Flea Market. Survey respondents say the Brimfield Flea Market is accidental attraction gold. Miles of antiques, odd furniture, vintage signs, mystery objects, and people confidently considering items they absolutely cannot fit into their cars. What could go wrong? It's an environment in which people can connect over a weird lamp or a box of old postcards and create a unique chemistry. Next is Market Basket Checkout Line. To some extent, grocery stores have long been considered a promising meeting point. But Market Basket has an added distinction, survey respondents claim. The 95-store chain's More for Your Dollar motto allows shoppers to bond over the costs of produce or a good cut of meat. Murphy said everyday places give people an easy reason to talk. No perfect opening line needed when you're both stuck in the same long line or looking at the same weird antique at a flea market, he said. They're everyday Massachusetts settings, which makes a small interaction feel more natural than it would in a formal dating environment. And it's those small interactions that can lead to serendipitous romance. how you behave still matters. Survey results found that the rising costs associated with traditional dating may contribute to the appeal of, quote, accidental romance. When asked whether rising prices have made conventional date spots, such as bars, restaurants, concerts, or other paid activities seem less appealing, 96% of respondents said yes. Nevertheless, good behavior and manners still matter. Being polite to service workers topped the everyday behaviors list that made a good impression on folks, at least according to 96% of survey respondents. Other everyday behaviors that stood out include helping someone with bags or directions or a photo, returning someone else's shopping cart, offering the last seat to someone, being kind to children or dogs, or letting someone cut in line when they're clearly stressed. The biggest accidental romance killer? Being rude to staff at 15%, followed by cutting in line, chronic complaining, being aggressive about parking, littering, and talking loudly on a cell phone. What came through in the survey is that people still like the idea of meeting someone in a more spontaneous way, Murphy said. There's something refreshing about a connection that happens in real life. It feels lower pressure and probably a little bit more memorable. That story was Looking for Love in Massachusetts? Try These Seemingly Unlikely Places. They Work, by Ruth Thompson. The next story is Equal to 300 Tons of TNT. Here's What Caused That Loud Boom in Massachusetts, by TNG staff. A loud boom that was heard across a broad swath of New England, from New Hampshire to Rhode Island, was caused by a meteor that broke up over the region Saturday afternoon, according to NASA. The event was also detected by a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration satellite, NASA reported on social media. Quote, eyewitnesses in New England and at NOAA's GOES-19, which is the Geostationary Operational Environmental Satellite, reported a bright fireball on Saturday, May 30th at 2:06 p.m. EDT, accompanied by a loud noise, NASA posted. The meteor appears to have fragmented at an altitude of 40 miles over northeast Massachusetts and southeast New Hampshire. The energy released at breakup is estimated to be equivalent of about 300 tons of TNT, which accounts for the loud noise. Speculations as to the cause at first ranged from an earthquake to an explosion. While most of those who have reported feeling or hearing the boom live in eastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island, there have also been reports from areas of central Massachusetts, including Auburn, Uxbridge, and Upton. Our two dogs charged the front door, said Suzanne Scallion of Yarmouth. It was like a tree falling. I thought it sounded like a huge truck going over a pothole outside, said Joanne Gies of Auburn. That story was Equal to 300 Tons of TNT. Here's What Caused That Loud Boom in Massachusetts, by TNG staff. The next story is Why Milford, Massachusetts Principal Says Class of 26 Is Ready for a Broken World, by Caroline Bunnell. Milford. Milford High School's graduation ceremony on Sunday, May 31, was defined not only by celebration. As school staff, family members, and friends gathered on a picture-perfect spring day at the school's turf field, they were also treated to a reminder of resilience and the power of a community that rallied around one of its own. Principal Josh Otlin, himself a Milford High alumnus, encouraged the 282 members of the class of 2026 to look for beauty in a broken world. Quote, your future is filled with enormous promise and potential, he said. Yes, there is much to be worried about. You have come of age during a chaotic and frightening time. but you are old enough to know that in this broken world, full of tragedy, heartbreaking evil, there's also incredible beauty, joy, and meaning. Otlin said that despite global uncertainty, he is inspired by today's young adults and optimistic about the change they can create. A year after ICE detention, graduate praises community support. The ceremony's emphasis on perseverance felt especially fitting for graduate Marcelo Gomez da Silva, who was detained a year ago to the day of Sunday's graduation by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. ICE held him for 6 days in Burlington after stopping him on his way to volleyball practice. A year later, Gomez da Silva graduated alongside his classmates and is heading to Providence College to study political science. "It means a lot to me," he told the Daily News in a brief interview after the ceremony. "Without the Milford community, I wouldn't be here today. I truly believe that I wouldn't be graduating today if it weren't for them. It makes me mesmerized." Class President praises student advocacy. Class of 2026 President Diego Sampaio, whom Otlin praised for his leadership during uncertain times, commended his classmates for their resilience and willingness to speak for what is right. "We learned the true meaning of resilience when one of our classmates was facing injustice," he said. "The class of 2026, you spoke up when no one else did. You demonstrated bravery in your selfless ability to stand up for others." Sampaio reminded his classmates that time changes perspective, noting how much they've grown since beginning their time at Milford High. "I know everyone here today has heard that time goes by so fast," he said. "Today we're feeling that more than ever, because the truth is, no one is the same person we were 4 years ago. We walked into this building as timid, nervous freshmen, trying to figure out where our classes were. And now we're leaving as young adults, full of dreams and responsibilities." Co-valedictorians share messages of love and growth. Milford High recognized co-valedictorians Ana Julia de Alameda Pereira and Giovanna Lucia Weiner. Otlin described Pereira as a student with a servant's heart, demonstrated through her character and community volunteer work. She shared a message centered on love, encouraging classmates to reflect on the people who have shown up for them. Quote, "People rarely remember every achievement, accomplishment, or award they receive," Pereira said. "What they do remember is who showed up for them, who made them feel seen, who stayed, and who cared." She said conversations with classmates revealed that many defined love through the sacrifices of family members or the support of teachers during difficult times. Pereira said one theme remained constant. Love came from those who stood by them when it mattered most. She urged graduates to love themselves as well, acknowledging the strength it took to reach this milestone. Quote, "Love is not only something we receive or talk about," she said. "It is something we choose again and again. When we choose it well, what we've learned here doesn't stay behind us in the past. It moves forward with us. It shapes how we serve, how we lead, and how we treat every person from this point on." Weiner's speech focused on the importance of reframing failure, sharing her belief that rejection is redirection. Otlin described Weiner as a high-achieving student in all facets of the school, including academics, athletics, and the arts. Quote, "Every failure, every rejection, allowed me to walk down a new path, where I might discover something different, that I cared so deeply about, and that very likely would also confront me with rejection," Weiner said. "The phrase, rejection is redirection, has helped reframe my entire outlook about what it means to fail. Because failure itself isn't inherently a bad thing, but our reaction to failure defines how it impacts our lives." There is a picture that was taken today, May 31st, as all the graduates are on the football field wearing their caps and gowns. Actually, they're just wearing their gowns because they're all throwing up their caps. And a lot of them have their arms up in the air, their mouths are wide open. They must be yelling and whooping and hollering. They all look pretty ecstatic. Photo courtesy of John Ratner for the Milford Daily News. That story was why Milford, Massachusetts principal says class of 26 is ready for a broken world by Carolyn Bunnell. The next story is renewable energy not just efficient, but also less vulnerable. This is to the editor. Maybe the Strait of Hormuz will open soon, and maybe gas prices will eventually start to come down. Or maybe not. One thing we can be sure of is that solar and wind energy do not have to travel through a war zone. They can provide for our energy needs without worrying about shocks to global markets. When paired with batteries, which are getting better and less expensive all the time, they're even more reliable. Right now, at the State House, our legislators have a chance to move us toward that efficient, less vulnerable future. Or they can choose to cut mass save and discourage solar permitting, leaving us dependent on the price of natural gas and oil in our energy budgets. State Senate Leader Karen Spilka is our senator in Framingham. We need to call her and urge her to keep full funding for mass save and support for solar and energy storage in the current energy bill at the State House. That's the path away from the whims of our federal foreign policy to a more stable energy future. That story was renewable energy not just efficient, but also less vulnerable, which was a letter to the editor by Mary Memmott. The next story is when will Love Island USA cast list drop? How to watch upcoming season by Catherine Messier. Welcome back, bombshells! As June returns, so does the summer's favorite reality show, Love Island USA. The reality dating show will officially return for its eighth season on Tuesday, June 2, ushering in another summer full of challenges and recouplings in the villa. With the premiere under 1 week away, Love Island USA has yet to release the cast for season 8. However, if last season's Massachusetts bombshell and underdog winner is any indication, some of the best twists in the show are born out of surprises. Ready to see if another New Englander takes on the villa this summer? Here's what to know about season 8 of Love Island USA, including when and where to watch. How does Love Island USA work? Hosted by Ariana Madix, Love Island USA brings together a group of single men and women with the hopes of finding love to a villa on a tropical island for the summer. Typically, in the premiere, each woman chooses a man to couple up with after a first impression. From that point, the islanders face a challenge. Will they stay with their chosen partner and develop their relationship? Or will their heads be turned by, quote, bombshells, which are later rivals who join the villa throughout the season? Along the way, the islanders will live through plenty of drama, including recouplings and eliminations. Because new episodes air within days of filming, these consequences can be affected by viewers, who are prompted to use the Love Island USA app to vote for their favorite or least favorite contestants or couples throughout the season. Viewers also vote to choose the winning couple, who is awarded with a $100,000 cash prize and a choice of whether to split the money between themselves. When does Love Island USA Season 8 air? Season 8 of Love Island USA will premiere on Tuesday, June 2 at 9 p.m. Premiere week will see a new episode of Love Island USA daily at 9 p.m. After that, new episodes will air at 9 p.m. every day except Wednesday, when there is no content. And Saturday, when the show's companion talk show, Love Island After Sun, airs instead. How to watch Love Island USA Season 8. Love Island USA Season 8 will air live on Bravo every day except Wednesday throughout the summer of 2026. New episodes can also be streamed the same night that they're on Peacock. Has the Love Island USA Season 8 cast been released? The cast for Season 8 of Love Island USA has not yet been announced, with cast reveals typically happening within days of a new season premiere. Last year, the Season 7 cast was announced on May 29, with the premiere following on June 3rd. This year, the cast for the new season of Love Island in the United Kingdom was announced May 26 ahead of the show's June 1 premiere date, meaning an announcement for Love Island USA is likely just around the corner. Who won Love Island USA Season 7? Last summer, the seventh season of Love Island USA was won by fan favorite Amaya Papaya Espinal and Massachusetts' own Brian Arenelis, a 28-year-old who was born and raised in Everett. Arenelis' win marked the first time someone from New England was crowned a winner on the summer reality show. Do couples from Love Island USA actually stay together? Although Espinal and Arenelis are no longer together, Love Island USA has produced many lasting couples in recent years, including fan favorites like Serena Page and Cordell Beckham from Season 6, Leah Kateb and Miguel Harici from Season 6, Iris Kendall and Pepe Garcia from Season 7, and Alondria Carthen and Nick Van Steenberge from Season 7. There is a picture of Alondria Carthen and Nicholas Van Steenberg from that, I guess it's Season 7, and they are sitting at a table at nighttime. There are tropical flowers on the table, two red candles, and they're sitting across from each other with these tall champagne flutes that are white, so they're you can't see through them. And Alondria is very beautiful. She's wearing like this little tiny, tiny white halter top and a tight orange skirt. She's African-American with gorgeous black long hair, and she's got these giant gold earrings on. And she's looking across the table at Nicholas, who is a guy with kind of curly brown hair that's a little bit like kind of floppy on top. He's got his hands around his drink, and he's smiling at her. He's a white guy. Photo courtesy of Peacock, Ben Simons for Peacock. That story was When Will Love Island USA Cast List Drop? How to Watch Upcoming Season by Catherine Messier. You have been listening to a reading of the Milford Daily News. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Melanie Guralnick. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is not a public service announcement. This is a one-minute mystery.
While digging for artifacts in the far north, Professor Quantum found a perfectly preserved body of a man. He was overjoyed. He believed the frozen body was none other than Adam from the Bible. What convinced Quantum of that?
And here's the solution to our mystery.
The body was missing what Adam would be missing, a belly button. What Quantum didn't know, however, is that a rare condition called umbilical aplasia causes some people, other than Adam, to be born without a belly button.
And now back to our regular programming.